Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Mark Reardon Show.
He's a bully with $17 million and a security detail.
Quit the tough guy act. You know where to find me. Any place, cowboy.
It's common sense. You know, some things are law, and I'm all in favor of it. And some things are common sense.
And I heard a boom in my whole house shook.
This is the Reardon Roundtable.
Every day it's something new here in this studio, so that was kind of fun. We did a little echo. I was just experimenting with that just to see if we would do the entire Reardon Roundtable in an echo chamber this afternoon.
Well, it was a success.
It was a success.
Yes, but unfortunately, we've moved on.
There was a button that was put. I blame Brad. That's who I'm blaming right now because he was on this board before me, and I apologize for that because we had no idea what was going on, but something was pressed that should not have been pressed. Ladies and gentlemen, how are you as we take you into the weekend? Friday is here. Sue, I would argue that the week went by relatively quickly.
I know you would.
You don't say. It's been slow for you?
Yes, and I can't. I don't know. I think I've psyched myself out.
Well, no, everybody's got different perspectives. There's no doubt about that. We'll ask our panel here this afternoon as Jane is making her way into the studio. She caught a little traffic. Donna Berenger is here, state representative, and also a new candidate for another office here in St. Louis, the St. Louis City Comptroller. Or do you say comptroller? How are you, Donna?
Comptroller?
Comptroller.
All right.
I'm
well,
great,
say
Mark.
It that way.
I was always confused by that because, like, in Illinois, they had a comptroller. They used to call it comptroller. But then I always thought that the name was controller because you're controlling the finances, right? And we'll get into that
either.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Sean Flowers here. He's the mayor of Eureka. I know what the word mayor means. How are you, Sean?
Doing very well.
Thanks for coming in. Well, let me... I want to talk to Jane about some of this stuff with the school shooting and the hush bunny, but let me start just with the abortion issue because there's actually some breaking news on that here this afternoon, and you guys can react to this in real time. I just found this before the show and wasn't really clear what was going on, and my guess is, you know, there's going to be a lot of legal wrangling that goes on before the election, although this is important because it has to happen before next Tuesday. So here's the story. Mary Elizabeth Coleman, who I think was on the panel last week, if I'm not mistaken. I'm losing track of it. No, she wasn't.
No.
She was supposed to be here, but she was busy.
Yeah.
But she is a Republican state senator who's been very active on the pro-life side. And she and another group, I guess, have gone in and they have asked a Cole County judge to block the abortion issue. Christopher Limbaugh is the judge. He said that briefs were due just a few minutes ago at 3 o'clock. He would rule as soon as possible. So they have to finalize the ballots by Tuesday. And I guess the claim here is that the language violates a constitutional requirement that measures adhere to one subject. And they said that in violation of state law, it did not include information in the text of the petition, which laws would be repealed if voters approved Amendment 3. So there's a woman named Mary Catherine Martin, who's an attorney with the Thomas More Society, who represents the plaintiffs and says it should not be on the ballot. And Mary Elizabeth's name is mentioned here as well. So they heard some arguments, I guess, and some briefs. And I guess the judge is going to have to consider this. My sense would be this is not going to be kicked off the ballot, but I don't know the particulars of the constitutional issue here. Donna, do you know anything more about this or what's your reaction to that?
Well, I apologize because I actually don't. But what I will tell you is that we do use what's called ballot candy. And that's basically the first sentence of the amendment would be something you would automatically reply to, no, yes, but then it goes on and on and on and on. It's actually saying something else. So that would not be original because we do ballot candy. So that's why I was confused about saying it would violate what we say in the House called the Hammerschmidt rule, which is it has to be one topic only.
Well, that seemingly is the claim, but in this, and this is again one of those constitutional amendment issues that is very lengthy, right? It's very wordy. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the entire thing, but Sean, I don't know if this is something that might pass, you know, constitutional muster. In other words, a judge says, okay, it's off the ballot. To me, it seems like a last ditch effort to keep this thing from voters, and I don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah, it seems like the language, especially the ballot language on this one's gone back and forth, because wasn't there a cover of the Post-Dispatch this morning too, that they were another one, they were something with you know, Ashcroft taking it off. So, I mean, I know that language. I mean, the bill's controversial, and
right.
that language is obviously causing a lot of controversy back and forth. But yeah, it seems it always seems to me it's hard to get a judge to take a ballot that's been put on there off with all the petitions.
Right.
The bar's pretty high.
The quote from the ACLU and the Post coverage is that politicians and special interest groups are making a last-ditch effort to prevent Missourians from exercising their constitutional right to direct democracy. That's Tori Schaefer, who's with the ACLU. Jane has made her way in. Do you know anything about this, the lawsuit? And I guess Mary Elizabeth was involved in this. They're trying to keep the abortion issue off the ballot. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to work, though, Jane, is it?
No. In fact, the judge fixed the ballot language because it was a little over the top, and that's where you're getting all the arguments about, oh, they can have an abortion until the baby's born, because that was the sort of the title that was actually misleading, and the court and a Republican judge found it to be misleading. So, no, I don't think it's going to work. But, everybody's going to try to stop it. I mean, that's just the way the process is.
The arguments are the same either way. Like, if you don't, you could take the exact same party, flip it, and if they didn't like the amendment, you would use the same arguments. It's all process-based arguments. So it's
absolutely,
and
you do want people fighting when you're changing the Constitution. I mean, you know, I've always been this. We're playing too much with the Constitution.
Yeah, it's not a good process.
It's not a great process. So even though this is something I support people's ability to challenge.
All right, let me kind of shift gears here and talk about what happened in Georgia. And now we have a lot more information. I find it interesting, I said this yesterday, that we have more information on this kid and the family involved in this shooting than we have ever had in the last 7 or 8 weeks on what happened in Pennsylvania with the assassination attempt. So that in and of itself is a little confusing to me. But last night, and this happened after essentially I was off the air, the father of the teenager who killed 4 people has been arrested, as I think most people know. Colin Gray is his name. He's been charged with 4 counts of manslaughter, 2 counts of second-degree murder, 8 counts of cruelty to children. And it's interesting because, look, they went in the spring of last year. They had conversations with this kid and his family after there were tips that were kind of sent from the FBI, and they were vetting these. So there were investigations that were committed, and the father said, no, I'm going to keep the firearms in check and all this stuff. The kid denies all this stuff. The following Christmas, last Christmas, he buys the kid an AR. He gives it to him after law enforcement visits the home, and after he threatens to shoot up a school. He says to the investigators that he never had unsupervised access, so they swooped in very quickly here. We saw what happened in Michigan, but these prosecutors wasted no time in charging this guy. Thank God, because
absolutely,
he's completely culpable. I hope he spends the rest of his years behind bars.
I mean, this is, I don't even know how, what place, I mean, I'm a parent. I can't imagine if my, you know, child has threatened to shoot up a school, that I think it's a great idea to buy him an AR. It's unfathomable to me. And I'm glad that parents are starting to be forced to be accountable for the behavior of their kids.
Yes.
Because, government can do what government can do, but families have to do what they have to do. And this was a complete breach. Here's the thing. You know, law enforcement is it's very difficult. They can't just take people to jail because people make threats. So they did as much as they possibly could. There's nothing more the government could have done here without, you know, just really basically putting someone in jail because they may have a mental illness, which, you know, we're not going to go down that path.
I think that's for the most part true, but there was a little confusion when I was reading the accounts of what happened last spring, because the FBI certainly was involved. They got involved with the local law enforcement, and they seemingly worked together. But then at one point, it seems like the feds came back and said that this was not deemed a reliable threat, which that part was confusing to me. But Jane, generally, I think you're right.
The mental illness of someone.
Right, but if this was a year ago, that means he was only 13 years old.
Yes, he was only 13, exactly.
Correct. And so maybe that's why they said, oh, it's only a 13-year-old.
I mean,
they wouldn't have access to an AR-15 and go out and shoot up a bunch of people.
Right.
So that's what they
do. Do you know about the Russian, handle that he had on the social media account? So the account that he had, and again, there was some difficulty connecting the kid to the account, and he says, and his dad's like, well, he doesn't know any Russian, right? Well, if you translated Russian, and I don't know if the kid did or not, but listen to what happened here. If you translate his handle, it was Lanza, L-A-N-Z-A.
As in Adam Lanza?
Adam Lanza.
Oh, my Lord.
So that's another mass shooter.
Red flag.
Yep. Right. So this kid, that's what I said yesterday, that this kid had red flag as his middle name.
But
he really did.
You know, but here's the thing. I mean, I don't know that law enforcement can go in and take this kid.
I understand that.
And so then, you know, so at some point, I mean, and I know that people are calling for government regulation. I get it. But the bottom line in this situation, the parents should have stepped in and done something.
Well, there's more than just the father. So let me get to the mother here, and then there's the wacky aunt, and I'll cover that too. So Marcy Gray is the mother. She's 43 years old. She has a lengthy rap sheet, including charges of drug and domestic violence arrest. Neighbors say that this is horrible. I mean, this kid was effed up, I think, is what we're going to find out. She locked the children outside of the house at night, leaving them there to scream for hours. Child Protective Services had visited the home many times since the family moved there, and they've only been there for 2 years. And then the aunt, now this is someone claiming to be this kid's aunt on Facebook, warning that there's going to be trouble if anyone speaks ill of her nephew. So this part of the story says that Annie Polhamas Brown, who identified herself as Gray's aunt, leapt to the teen's defense in a series of since-removed Facebook posts soon after authorities identified him as the gunman. The woman vowed to stick by the kid, saying she will not, in caps, leave her nephew standing alone. So I don't know exactly what that's about, but this is a disaster. You have two teachers and two kids that were killed at this school. Mm-hmm. They had just started. A couple of the kids had just started there. Mm-hmm. It is a horrifying week, and I can't imagine having, you know, the information that they have now and knowing what they know. You have to be even more infuriated.
Yes. Well, I mean, so if Child Protective Services was there, you wonder, you know, what should they have done? I mean, this sounds like a horrible situation.
Mm-hmm. But they probably threatened them. I would think that they probably actually threatened the people that showed up at their house.
I can't say.
You mean the family did?
If they are acting this way.
But I do think, I mean, I'm generally pro Second Amendment. I don't think you should be taken, you should not be, you know, blanket taking guns away from law-abiding citizens. But I do think there's a responsibility with that. And especially in cases like this, I think it actually sends a very good message that parents, I mean, especially unless you hand a kid a gun, and it's illegal for that kid to have that rifle at 13. You're not even supposed to have that kind of stuff. There's so many laws.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Broken on it. There has to be punishment for people that know better, mm-hmm. and there is existing law. For those that say the gun laws don't do it, there's an existing law. This guy's going to jail, and he's going to be that's another parent doing it. So if you're going to buy a gun and you're going to have it, you better know what you're doing.
The statutes also, though, have to match up, don't they, Jane, in mm-hmm. order to prosecute people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what the language would be in Missouri, you know, to have the ability to do this if a parent's involved. Do we have that within our law?
There are criminal laws like child endangerment. Yeah. The penalties for that are not probably as stiff as what people would want to be if you handed your kid a gun.
Well, the Michigan
and he's killed
ones, they're going to jail for a while, and I don't know that those were special.
I mean,
laws
we may need to
child,
look at Missouri
you know,
laws.
I mean, you know,
we
I,
may yeah. need to look at them.
Well, and unfortunately, you're right though. They went to, I think they're like 15 to 18 years or something like that. It was significant,
right,
which it should be.
But we have the most lax laws of any state in the United States when it comes to guns.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to bring up another case here from St. Louis, as you know, with this 4-year-old that was killed. And that's another issue that involves the parents. So hang in there. It's a Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon. Jane Duker, State Rep Donna Behringer, the mayor of Eureka, Missouri. Sean Flower is here, ELO, in town tonight. Enterprise Center.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.